Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Trent Gilbert. He is a guitar player, steel guitar player, also writes his own songs and plays around town here in Nashville.
If you are listening to this show on Spotify or any other platform where you listen to your podcast, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from Trent, as well as all of our other guests that we have on.
Check it out.
Because how long have you been doing, at this point, you're just doing music, right?
Yeah. I've been just doing music since, I think like halfway through 2023. Okay. So like almost 2 years, I haven't had a day job. And it's been crazy. I mean, like I'm not like saving any money. I'm like constantly spending it on gear, but I've like made like twice as much money playing gigs as I did all the other times I had a day job. But it's not like I was doing any kind of serious day job. It was always just
but still, it's gotta feel good.
$20 an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. That's gotta feel really good. What was it? Was that like scary to pivot like that or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first moved to town,
Cause when did you get here anyway? I can't even remember.
Like three ish. I guess it was October or November 2021.
Okay.
Yeah. But I started taking trips up here in like June or like May 2021. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it feels like 4 years, but it's been less than that. But I guess the past two, I've been kind of back to just freelancing, I guess. And before COVID, that's what I was doing too. But I was like in college and didn't have like that many real life expenses, you know? So I was, you know, not very realistically making a living, but I was
doing kind of working in that world. Yeah. That's hard. I mean, I think that gets harder the further and further you push it out, you know, like when you're doing that or you want to do that and you are in college or right out of college, you think like, oh God, you know, I can live off of ramen and nothing else. You know, like it's just, it doesn't feel like that big of a shift, but I do feel like music is one of those things where the more you keep kicking that can down the road, like the harder it gets to be able to pivot to exclusively doing that. So I think it's cool. Like, I mean, I think it's amazing that so many of our friends out here, like that's what they do. They play music. I mean, I think there's something really, really noble and just really cool about that. And especially in Nashville, because like you can do that other places, but I mean, Nashville is, I don't want to say it's cutthroat, but it's the bar here is high, you know, for good reason. You know?
At the same time, I'd say there's much more opportunity here.
Yeah, exactly. It all kind
of much more opportunities to play out than quite possibly any other city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I tell people all the time. It's like, there's other places in the world that claim to be like the capital of live music. But I mean, like, come on, there's like, there's so many bands playing all the time. I mean, even though like Broadway, it's like 50, whatever bars and everybody's kind of playing the same stuff. It's not just Broadway and there's
many other shows happening like every fucking night. Mm-hmm.
And it's like really cool stuff happening downtown too.
And even the Broadway stuff, there's cool shit going on there too. I mean, as much as people can kind of knock that sometimes, that you can find really awesome stuff down there.
Yeah, like Skulls Rainbow Room. Yeah. They have like jazz and stuff there.
Yeah, that's a cool spot.
Yeah, I always forget about that place. All the
kind of tucked away.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. There's this jazz club in Kansas City that I was just randomly in Kansas City one time, and my friend who had been there had told me to go to this jazz club, and it's like the Green Lady Lounge or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's just like
same
Skulls.
Kind of vibe.
It's like real like dim lit and like just, you know, small bar, just like same layout as like Roberts or whatever, but just like kind of more low key and just, you know, hidden. But there's jazz, you know.
Yeah, and I think that was a big thing for me too, because I mean, I had never, Nashville had not been something that was really on my radar. I mean, historically, just in terms of what it's brought for music, but I never thought of living here until, you know, all of a month before or 2 months before we decided to move out here.
Yeah. That's so cool though.
And, but I think that's one of the cool things about Nashville is, you know, everyone pegs it as a country scene, which obviously there's so much of that here, but there's all kinds of other cool shit here too. I mean, mm-hmm. you just need to kind of poke around, but you'll
totally,
you will find it. Like what for you, what, where are you from originally again? I know this, but
Clover, South Carolina.
Okay. South Carolina. Nice.
Yeah. Actually, originally York, South Carolina, but they're both in the same county. But
gotcha.
But yeah, it's like the right across the North Carolina border. So like, there's a bunch of people that like, you know, live around there and pay lower taxes because it's South Carolina, but they like work a job in North Carolina or whatever, mm-hmm. commute or whatever. But yeah, that's where I'm from originally.
Did you live there like whole life until coming out here? Or
yeah, I was in. York, South Carolina until I was 9 years old, and then we moved like 10 minutes down the road to Clover, and then I was in Anderson, Greenville area of South Carolina for school. So that's like the upstate, like kind of more on the like Atlanta side of South Carolina, but
gotcha.
But yeah, that's where I was up until 2021. I was in Greenville, South Carolina before.
Nice. I live in South Carolina for four years. Yeah. It's beautiful. I do fucking love it out there.
Yeah,
I live in Beaufort, so it's not as, maybe not as exciting, but like,
yeah,
but I do love it. Like I haven't been back and I used to have some other family out there too.
It's so humid down that way.
Oh yeah. That is one thing that I don't miss. It's funny. Cause like I grew up a lot really on the East Coast and the South. And then when my family moved out to California, I'd never been past Colorado before. I'd never been further west than Colorado. And I remember I'd never been in like dry heat before.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just was something I had never been exposed to. And I will never forget going through Vegas the first time. It was like probably 1 a.m. in the middle of summer. And I got out of that car and like I took a breath and I was like, you know, I can do like wet, humid heat. Oh my God. It was like my body like didn't know what
really
to do.
No, I'm the opposite. I feel like, yeah. So I grew up like in San Diego.
Okay. Yeah.
But I feel the opposite. Like dry heat for me.
Oh, I'll take dry heat now. Dry heat now.
The humid heat, like the summers here, dude, I do not do well. Like I fucking hate it. Cause you just like you stand outside for like 10 minutes and you're sweating for no reason.
The thing is, though, I could be standing inside of this house and I'll just sweat. Like I'm just one of those people.
I can't stand the humidity. I still haven't gotten used to it.
So why the move to Nashville? I mean, obviously there's the music scene here, but like was the whole idea I'm going out there and I'm just going to bust my balls trying to make a living playing music, or like did you have a plan? What was the whole thought process?
Well, my dad's a real big turkey hunter, or just hunting in general, and they have the National Wild Turkey Federation convention at the Gaylord Hotel here, mm-hmm. and it's like every February. So like my first time visiting, I was like 14, and it was like the whole weekend we were just like here for the hunting stuff, but it's like Nashville, and I was like interested in playing guitar and stuff, and so I like got to go to Corner Music when it was still in 12 South.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I like bought like my first pedal board there, and like my like brothers and my dad would be like at the convention hall like walking around, and I was like in our hotel room like playing with this pedal board that I couldn't even like plug into anything.
That's funny.
And like trying to figure out how to like wire, you know, the like four pedals I had in like the right way. But yeah, I think we like went to the Opry and saw like Josh Turner, and then there was another couple times in high school where it's just like 6 hour drive, so it's like a you know, sort of kind of common vacation for people, you know, from the area I'm from. So I just like ended up visiting here a few times and was just like, I want to live here. You know, every time I came back, I would be like, man, I want to live here one day. But yeah, this starting to do the music thing just right out of high school, I like just found myself playing gigs, and you know, I had a pedal steel, and so like that kind of like brought me into a lot of places that I wouldn't have otherwise been if I just had a guitar. So
did you start on pedal steel? Did you start on guitar?
No, I got a guitar when I was like 8. Okay. I was like 9. I think I was like 9, about to turn 10 or something like that. And then a family friend of mine gave me a pedal steel that's still like my main guitar when I was like 14 or 15. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that same family friend, his name's Brian Hudson. He had like his family babysat me and my brother, and he had a musician's friend catalog at the house, and there was like an upright piano, and I knew that he played pedal steel and had seen him play before. But I remember just like being babysat over at their house and then like going through this musician's friend catalog and like wanting to have a guitar, even though I'd like never really picked one up. And like, I think the next year I like got one for Christmas or something like
that.
That's
killer.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always we've talked about this a million times, but like there's just something cool about finding music at that age.
Oh,
you know, where you're like, this is it either gets you or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But for the people that it gets, it's like it doesn't let go. It's the coolest thing.
Seriously.
What so you started on guitar and then then pedal steel came into the equation. When you're tackling music now, do you sort of compartmentalize those two things in your head? Because I feel like there's such, as you know, someone who has played pedal steel but cannot play pedal steel, they're such drastically different areas in my mind musically. The, mm-hmm. the mechanics of a guitar versus the mechanics of pedal steel. Do you feel like they're two sort of separate worlds that you play in, or do you feel like whatever you're learning on one can easily translate to the other?
I feel like now that I've had a pedal steel for long enough to where it's like, you know, I've had a pedal steel for over 10 years, but I'm not like going to call myself somebody who's played for 10 years because like I didn't really have any business playing pedal steel, even though I had one until I was like 18. And then people were like figuring out ways to get me to learn songs and get on gigs and stuff. But yeah, I feel like now that I've kind of like been around it for long enough, it's more of like a language that I can, you know, sort of speak a little bit the way that like, you know, when you've played whatever instrument for a long time. But like, I feel like I sort of had that with guitar for like a few years before. And so now it's starting to become something that's not as compartmentalized. But I don't know. I feel like pedal steel is like it serves like a different function in the band.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and I guess like music theory wise, like the actual like attacking the instrument and playing it, I can find more ways to like see the guitar and the steel through like a similar lens. But like when you actually come down to like what, you know, your like role, what the character or whatever you're mm-hmm. playing in the band is like, the guitar is just like so much more like a rhythm.
Yeah. It's much more rhythmic. Steel, I feel like steel's kind of more like over the top. Like,
it's the sizzle. On top,
like, ornamental.
Yeah.
Definitely the word.
I think steel works best in sort of the counter melody world where you can play off of, where you can really play off of the melody and have that beautiful back and forth. Mm-hmm. Whereas guitar is it's a part of the rhythm section, you know, like as much as I love lead guitar and I think it can be so beautiful, the function of a guitar is really a rhythmic instrument, you know?
Yeah. That's why I think it's kind of just like fun getting to be a pedal steel player because you're like, it's like less responsive. Bring a lot more gear.
It's like let me learn the lead in, like let me learn the intro, and then it's like I can have fun.
Yeah,
there's like less, especially compared to like a bass player. There's
bass. You have to be like
you're the man,
dead on. You have to know those songs like
that. Oh shit, we were like, supposed to go to the four. Whoops.
The room for interpretation and it's.
Sometimes I feel like that's how I play guitar, especially on a lot of country gigs, because a lot of times I do gigs where I like don't really know the songs that well. So I just kind of play in a way, obviously not like steel, but that I can kind of just like bullshit my way over the top of things and not have to be like solid on the money like a bass player is.
There you go. Hey, you gotta, again, you gotta find what works for you, you know?
That's, the reason I play like that is because I don't know the fucking song.
Right. Yeah, like when Brian and I, so like we moved out here in 2018, and when we moved out here, we had no idea what we were doing at all. Like we were finishing up school, and our school would do like once a year they would have essentially a field trip to Nashville where like they would take you to like a bunch of recording studios and like, you know, just a bunch of shit around town. It was really a networking thing for people to try and, you know, entice people to come out here and really, you know, join the music business here. And it was hilarious. We came out and, you know, we were like almost out of college, not knowing what we were going to do. And it was like us and a bunch of freshmen. And then there was a handful of us who were like finishing up, you know? So like we all kind of, cause we could also go out and like drink and stuff. We're like, you know, and we got here and we're just like, this place is fucking great. I never stepped foot in Nashville in my life. I was like, I fucking love Tennessee. And so we just kind of went for it. And it's a really great spot. I mean, there's, yeah, like Brian was saying, it is, there's a lot going on here and you can find whatever you want, you know, mm-hmm. But for you, when you were a kid, like what are your earliest memories of music? Like not even just picking up a guitar, but like, what are your earliest memories of being like, oh, I like this thing, you know?
That's like one of the cool things about it is like, that's like literally my first memories that I like can recall, and it's not just like because somebody told me, like,
yeah,
I was like 3 years old, and it's like this could be like my first like conscious moments, you know. But like I remember my dad had this little Chevy S10 and he was like always working on it, and like I would just be like, you know, little toddler just like out there like asking him all these questions while he's in the middle of trying to work on stuff. But now I remember being sitting inside of that truck and like probably more than once asking him to play this Travis Tritt song, Great Day to Be Alive.
Oh, nice.
And it was just like huge on the radio at the time because it's like, you know, 2000 or 2001 or something like that. But he just, you know, had like a cassette player and he didn't have that specific Travis Tritt, you know, cassette. So he was like, son, you got to wait on the radio to like play it. And so, like, you know, later, whenever I've, like, figured out how to use a phone, like, I was always calling the radio stations whenever I was a kid, like, trying to get him to play whatever song, you know, like, Freebird. I would always call it the classic rock stations, Skinner and stuff. But yeah, that was like, literally, like, some of my first conscious moments were, like, asking my dad if he could play that Travis Tritt song. And then somebody dug up my mom dug up these videos of me when I was like probably same age, like 3 or 4 years old. And I was like constantly like singing that song and, the Shrek song.
Oh,
hell
yeah.
All-Star. Yeah. All-Star by Smash Mouth.
That was a banger.
That and the Travis Tritt song, I was always like singing. And if it was like more than just like mom and dad around, I like had to like hide. So if it was like at a family function or something, they're like, Trent, you got to sing your song for everybody. And I would like go in like a closet or like hide behind like a curtain or something. But I was like, I had to be singing those songs all the time when I was a kid. But I didn't really like grow up with like instruments in the house at all, other than that family friend I was telling you about. There was like an upright piano that they would sometimes, you know, let me bang on and stuff. But yeah, I remember Brian Hudson, the guy that gave me my pedal steel, other memories of being like really little, and they would play these gigs at Cracker Barrel, and
nice.
It was the Hudson Family Band. So Brian and his brother, who had all these kids, he had like 8 kids, and they all like play different bluegrass instruments. And so they would do like just like standard bluegrass and gospel and like some like honky tonk, like Brooks and Dunn and Alan Jackson stuff. But yeah, that's another one of my really early memories is, he would be wearing in-ears and they're like all lined up on the front porch of Cracker Barrel. and he's like playing pedal steel, and I'm like, what does that do? And he's like taking his ears out, like, what are you? And you know, I was like distracting while he's in the middle of playing, but I'm just like, what is this thing that you're sitting at? You know?
Yeah, it's more like a spaceship control console than an instrument.
Yeah. You know, for real, man.
Yeah,
like, especially when you are like wearing in-ears.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
You're like on stage, or if you're like wearing sunglasses and you have ears on and you're like running this thing, it's like, you're not even like there. You're like in like a,
like another world. VR.
That's hilarious.
Oh, dude.
When you did like first actually like get an instrument and start playing, like who were the main guys, sort of main influences that kind of drove you to really dive deep into it?
Like actual people or like artists that I was listening to?
Either, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Brian, the pedal steel guy, and I mean, just like, you know, church music all the time. So like I had a second cousin who played piano, and he's like a preacher now, but no, all I wanted to do was play like Lynyrd Skynyrd
nice.
I started getting into Van Halen and Creed and stuff when I was in middle school. But yeah, just like all the like classic rock and like, Brad Paisley, but like actual country, like playing was like really hard for me for a long time, even though I like sort of grew up around it. Not like in the same way that kids that are like at the bluegrass conventions and actually have like family members that play instruments, but I still like was definitely aware of country music from a very young age. But like actually getting that like Brent Mason, Brad Paisley type technique down is like really hard. That's what I like. That's one of the big like sounds of like other than like Skynyrd and Van Halen and stuff was like the like real just standard hot chicken picking stuff.
Yeah, I think too like country has a little bit higher of a barrier to entry than like something like classic. Or like I started with same like classic rock and blues and stuff like that, and with that you can kind of just like learn a minor pentatonic scale and just rip that up and down and you sound like pretty decent, whereas I feel like country, you do kind of have to know the changes and, like, you know, play along with them.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's a little more complicated than other genres, I think.
Yeah, the mechanics are different, too. I mean, it's a hard thing to, like, it's one thing to show someone a scale or show someone, like, a basic chord progression. It's another thing to get that right hand mechanic where you need for some of that stuff, you know?
Yeah, that like, articulation, it's like a accent, you know. It's
yeah,
like,
for sure. Yeah,
you know, there's different like accents and in language and different regions and stuff like that, and it's like a that, and that's just the articulation part of it. But like you were saying, knowing the changes, it's like I think that's what like brought me around to like first of all really liking jazz and also like understanding why I needed to like learn music theory and be aware of any kind of like jazz playing or jazz standards or anything like that is like just to be able to like keep up as any kind of musician, but especially with country, just like you gotta have that little bit of jazz, you know, like
there's a lot of overlap, I think, between jazz 100%. And country music.
Mm-hmm. That, like, really, that's the only reason I know how to play country music. Like, if you play jazz licks but just make a twang, it's that's my strategy.
Now it's I do think there's quite a bit of overlap between those.
Like Willie Nelson. Like I've never. Like, Willie Nelson's a legend. I love Willie Nelson, but I've never been, like, as big of, like, a Willie Nelson head as I have been in, like, you know, Waylon or Merle or other guys. But it totally makes sense why he has that, like, background, and it, like, turned into him being just, like, the legend that he is and his like, playing style. And
Willie is a great fucking guitar player too. Like people don't give him enough. Like I don't know why his guitar playing is often overlooked. He's a phenomenal guitar player.
And didn't he wrote Nightlife, right? Or
I'm pretty certain he did.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain he did. We should have we'll have Alexa check that for us.
Yeah.
I've seen Willie perform a bunch of times in my life, and still has it. I mean, that guy's, yeah, he's a legend. But yeah, great guitar player, like really, really good guitar player. Well, he's one of those guys that he has such a fascinating career trajectory too. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, all those guys do, but his is kind of all over the place. You know, like to go from where he was initially, that kind of world he was playing into, you know, being outlaw countries. That's pretty badass. You know?
Right. Right.
Who are some of your favorite, who are some of your all time favorite musicians now or songwriters now?
Man, I feel like, I just like, I'm not like as big of a like listener of music as I used to be. It's like, I kind of like rely on the like algorithms more, but I feel like it's such a like basic answer for like somebody that's like, as you know, in Nashville for 3 years like me, but I've been listening to a lot of Keith Whitley recently, and not just because like, oh, somebody's like, oh, you need to be listening to Keith Whitley. It's just like,
yeah,
somebody sent me this song and I was like, man, this is good. And I just listen to it like every single day. And then it just, that just keeps happening over and over again where somebody sends me a Keith Whitley song or I find one. But yeah, I've just been like rediscovering like the whole 90s country thing through like a new lens or whatever. Cause there's like, you know, whatever you're aware of from, you know, your background that you are from, and then you get to Nashville and then there's like these Nashville songs that you all of a sudden like, you know, start learning. Like, I'm trying to think of one that's like when I first got, yeah, like, Dime at a Time by Del Reeves.
That's a good, yeah, that's, I love that tune.
How did I not know that that's before I moved to Nashville?
That's a banger.
You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like that, like first few months of living in Nashville, that song right there was like, you know, just like a diamond, you know. It's just like, how did I not find this before, you know? But it's just like so, I don't know. It's just so hidden that it sounds like, you know, familiar, you know, it's like,
yeah. Well, good melodies, at least in my head, when you hear a good melody, it's not like hearing something you've never heard before. Yeah. It's like being reminded of a song that, oh yeah, I know this one. Even if you have no idea where the melody is going to go, it goes exactly where it should go.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the best kind of song.
Yeah. This is a put together song, good melody. It's got that nice little guitar hook in the beginning and
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. But I find it interesting you say that you're like not as big of a listener like of music nowadays, because I often feel that same way kind of like, do you guys ever find that because you're like practicing and playing music so much that you listen a lot less?
Yeah, definitely. Like I feel like, you know, I used to drive around so much and just be driving around just to be listening to music in my car.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just like a thing to do when you're like a teenager or a college kid, yeah, or something. But yeah, it's like whenever it's not like your livelihood or like part of the like thing that you are heavily doing, it's like when you're into music, you like seek it out so much whenever it's not like laid out for you to have a bunch of stuff to do. Like I used to go to so many concerts and, or just go see people play more, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like just the busier you get, it's like whenever you do have free time, you're either practicing or you feel like your ears are tired or like, I don't know. I like my Spotify algorithm is so like, it includes so much of the stuff that I just have to practice.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And like, I don't, you know, it's like, am I becoming one of those people or something? And there's so many of those like different, like random genres, like, just like different random gigs throughout the year. And then I'm like having to like hammer, you know, a bunch of songs that I would never listen to otherwise, you know?
Totally.
And then my algorithm has like a whole category for that stuff. But yeah, like I need to like seek out and like buy more like albums and like, and make it more like intentional, I think that's also part of it. It's just like, I'm over here talking about the algorithm. It's like just whenever you're just listening to music digitally all the time, I feel like it makes it like less serious than
it's
like
more disposable.
Sitting down.
Yeah. It feels more disposable. When you're listening, like, do you have to have your ears on all the time, or can you shut that off? Because for me, I have to be able to, it's a switch I need to be able to throw. I need to be able to say, okay, I'm listening to this critically to musically dissect what's happening here, or I'm just sort of taking it all in. You know, you can never fully detach yourself from your mm-hmm. mind that way, but to me, it's a very conscious thing. Do you feel like that, or is it always on for you?
Yeah, I feel like I have to, like, consciously think about it, you know, like, because I'm so, like, melody oriented, like, or just like pitch or just like rhythm and lyrics are just, I can listen to a song for years and years and years, and like the you know, tonic part of, you know, the tones and the chords and the scales and stuff like that are pretty easy for me to just remember, but like I can listen to a song forever and not ever know the lyrics.
That's exactly how I am. Yeah.
When for you did the songwriting thing start?
I feel like in high school I had like this idea that it would be, you know, cool to do, but I wasn't like 100% on it, you know. Yeah. I like sang in choir and tried to like have this rock band and stuff, and
as we all did.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And but no, I think I broke my wrist skateboarding when I was like 17. Yeah, I was like right before senior year. And that
skateboarding,
like, and that like forced me to like sing a lot more, even though I didn't have like gigs or anything. Like I would like play guitar at church and stuff. But all of a sudden I like didn't have the ability to play guitar for like a few months. And, that like really, I feel like shaped a lot of, you know, what I was into at the time. 'Cause it's like, okay, well I can't play guitar, but I'm still like, you know, music's like one of my main things. It was similar. Recently, I cut my finger like really, really bad. And, it was like, I could play pedal steel, but I couldn't play guitar. So, I don't know. That was kind of a cool thing in the past year. It was kind of a weird little like echo of that mm-hmm. time where I like couldn't play guitar. So I was forced to sing. But yeah, I think that was probably it, is, just the singing thing. I feel like, you can be a singer, and I feel like I'm going through this right now where like you can be a singer and a person who likes to sing, but until you've like been a songwriter or written some songs and show people that you do that, that it's like, you're like not really taking it as seriously. I don't know. It's, mm-hmm. it's not really true, you know, 'cause there's plenty of people that, you know, do like, they sing at church or they sing in a wedding band type thing.
Yeah, they're just not songwriters and like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's great singers that do that. But yeah, I feel like, that's something I'm trying to like, work out with my whole kind of musical identity right now, mm-hmm. is to like finish some songs and like get that out there. 'Cause, I feel like there's like being the guy who plays guitar some and steel some, like there's like groups that I work with that like, or people will just be like, oh, I didn't even realize you played guitar like that, because they just know me as a steel player. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like the, songwriting and singing thing, I feel like those kind of go hand in hand a little bit for
me.
Is
that the thing you want to like fully commit to, like, you know, you play guitar, you play steel, you play, you know, you write songs, if you had to like commit to one thing, like what's the,
don't box
the,
in
the
like
thing
that.
You want to be your eventual end goal, or do you want to just be a person who kind of does a little bit of everything?
I think that's something that I lean more towards is that, because it's like the first thing that I wanted to do all the time. Like whenever I was, you know, 3 or 4 years old, was just like wanting to sing all the time. I don't know. I just feel like, just the opportunity to play music is like such a blessing. And then like the fact that you can just like do it, you know, with your voice, especially like, the choir stuff I did in high school and stuff like that. It's like, it's just a really cool thing that we can do as humans, yeah. You know, like just like singing and harmonizing together and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's like kind of the core of what I want to do, but I don't know. I'm kind of open to, you know, whatever kind of career path or whatever. But, one of those trips that we took to Nashville whenever I was in high school, we got to see, me and all my homeboys that were, in our rock band together. We got to see Kings of Leon do the New Year's Eve ball drop when they still the ball drop on Broadway. So it's like 200,000 people, and there's like stages on each end. And they had Chris Stapleton come out and sing, like after it turned midnight, they had Chris Stapleton come out and sing this Lynyrd Skynyrd song. They sang Simple Man the Kings of Leon. And I had like just found out about Chris Stapleton like a few months before that. And then it's like one of my favorite bands at the time somehow gets this Chris Stapleton dude I just found out about.
That's really
And then
cool.
They're singing Lynyrd Skynyrd, and me and all my boys are here. It was crazy.
It was, me and the like, boys listening to some skin. Oh,
dude. And we were like camped out all day too. Like there was two or three like bathroom breaks that I had to like get away from the crowd of 200,000 people, and it was like it took me like an hour to get to like wherever whatever bar I had to like walk off, you know, and then push all the way back up to the front of the crowd.
It's crazy down there sometimes.
I think that's why they don't do that down there anymore.
Yeah, it's honestly probably fair.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy. But there was this, we were all like 17 or 16 and like everybody's leaving, and it was like New Year's Eve, so it's super cold. And we found this beer, and it was just like sitting in the middle of Broadway, and people are starting to leave, and it was an unopened, just like big, like stadium beer. And we're like, that's our beer, boys. We cracked it open.
Like, pass it around.
The four or five of us
that's
like passing around
from the Lord. Yeah. Right there.
That's what I'm saying.
Everyone getting a light buzz going on.
Perfectly.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Crisp, clean, like Coors Light or Busch Light, but like big. And it was like 30 degrees outside. So
there you go. God.
Nice and
that's
cold.
That's a beautiful thing right there.
It was quite the memory. But yeah, we were like camped out there all day long to see that. But, but yeah, the Chris Stapleton's like whole trajectory from him already being the songwriter guy to like doing all that stuff, and that was like the year that was happening for him. I feel like that was a kind of a big like I don't know like realization that it's like a you know viable thing, and that's like the whole thing that him and all his guys are always talking about. If you ever like listen to their interviews, it's like, oh, I was going to be an engineer, and then somebody told me that you can just be a songwriter or whatever. I mean, that would be so cool to like have a publishing deal or a record deal or whatever. But I just spend so much of my time just wanting to play gigs and getting called to play guitar or pedal steel with people that I'm not really like hustling on the whole like songwriter and going to rounds and going to writes or trying to line up meetings or whatever, but I apparently that's what it takes to do the you know singer or songwriter thing full time like you were asking a second ago. But yeah, I don't know, it's like the whole social media thing, like you have to be like super like on top of that all the time.
It's hard. I mean, it's fucking hard. I mean, God knows, for my own stuff, I'm absolutely atrocious with it. It's been interesting because this whole thing, this whole production, I mean, that's so much of our life right now is like figuring out all of that. And, you know, it's been a whole process for us to learn how to do that because none of us are really, you know, that's not a world that any of us have ever really been in. So it's, I mean, that's a full-time job, dude. I mean, like, just being able to do that kind of stuff is a fucking full-time job. And it's things like that you don't think about. I mean, I think it's also really dependent on whether or not you've had people in your life that can show you, hey, you can make money doing music. I mean, like, for me, I had really no one in my life that's what they did. So it can seem like such an abstract, unattainable thing. But I think the second you have someone show you, like, hey, no, you can make this work, and here are some different ways you can do it. And yeah, it's really multifaceted. It's not like you're just going to learn one skill and you can, you know, it's not like you just have to be a really good guitar player. There's a lot of other shit that goes along with that. But the second someone reveals that to you, you're like, oh, cool, this is attainable, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think so many people don't have that. Because when you work in that world, you think that that's, well, this is what everyone does. But music is such a niche thing. I mean, in Nashville, it's a little different because it's just in the DNA of the place. But so much of the country, that's just not a big part of life for people, you know? So
yep.
I think just being aware of that and getting exposed to things like that makes a world of difference if you're someone who's, I think probably like all of us, just starts obsessing over that thing as a young person. You're like, oh, shit, absolutely. No, there is a way to do that, you know?
Yeah, like I feel like most people's, it's one of the main, you know, points for me that started, you know, making the light bulbs go off like that was playing in church. And I feel like that's kind of common for, you know, a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of what like steered me in the direction of going to college where I went and going to school for music and stuff is like, the worship leader at the church that I was at was like, you know, guitar player and singer, but he was like in charge of the band and stuff like that. And just being around that, I was like realizing like, oh, this is like commercial music. Like, even though, you know, we're at a church and we're doing whatever, like, you know, he's in charge of the songs and what keys they're going to be in and what musicians are there and stuff like that. And like,
you start to see that there's like a production to it, that there's some, mm-hmm. yeah, there's like an order to the, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the social media thing though, it's crazy. Cause like with this, you 20, 30 years ago, they had CMT and and it was like, all that was like the infrastructure for all that was there, or like radio shows or whatever. But now, you know, CMT is just reruns of other stuff and but it's not even like people would turn their TVs on anyways, because nobody watches TV anyways. but yeah, it's crazy like navigating, like, no matter whether you're doing your mm-hmm. personal artist thing or you're doing like a podcast like this, it's like the way that just like technology is just kind of,
and it can feel like
steered everything.
It can feel like you're just throwing shit at the wall. You know what I mean? I mean, and mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's kind of like what you need to do, because there's not really, I mean, there are certain things that you can do that will give you better odds for something to stick, you know, and you kind of, I think you learn that as you go, but it can feel very strange because you think, I hope this works. You know what I mean? And I'm one of those people who, like, I just don't do great with that feeling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know that, okay, this is my plan. This is what I'm going to do. And you kind of stick with it. But it can feel a little bit like, this is a little scary, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. There's kind of like no rules. I mean, I guess that's
kind of makes it interesting.
Yeah. I would much, much rather live in that world.
Than,
you know what I mean?
Than a world where this is the way you have to do things.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. It's nice that there is that kind of option for, like, who knows what works. Like,
yeah, just, exactly. I think there's something really great about that.
It
forces
you to just do whatever it is you do, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
There's a certain level of it where there's a certain amount of fuck it involved, I think, with doing anything you're passionate about. Where, like, obviously, you with this is a great example of that. You want to do this to the best of your ability, and you want to try to constantly improve upon the thing that you're doing. But at the same time, you sort of just recognize that, okay, we're just going to keep doing this. We're going to keep trying to improve as we do it, and hopefully it pays off, right? But, like, you can't, because the platform is essentially the entire world, you just sort of have to stick to your guns and just go for it. And I think that in the long run, I think that that's great for art in general. I think for people who, anyone who makes anything, again, I would much, much rather live in that world, because at the end of the day, people are just going to make this shit that they want to make, and maybe it'll resonate. And
yeah, I mean, I think that's what keeps it authentic. And I think at the end of the day, that's what really shines through and speaks to people, is authenticity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to keep it real with yourself. And that's what people will be attracted to.
Yeah. I mean, I always just think of like the stupid fucking meme pages that Brian and I will send each other on Instagram or something, like, you're like, how did this pop off? Right. But it's because idiots like us will look at this and be like, oh my God, like,
there's
this one guy that Brian, did you send this to me or did I send this to you? The lighter guy who grabs the lighter.
Oh yeah. Dude.
There's this guy on Instagram.
Does he know who we're talking about?
Yeah.
So it's so funny.
Like, I fucking love it. There's shit like that in the world, dude.
I have gone through all that guy's videos, and for whatever, I don't know, it's just so funny that, like, somebody like that can get so many people watching this shit.
But I fucking, like, there is no part of me that is upset that that guy has, like, half a million followers.
I actually found another guy who does a similar thing.
Really?
Yeah, since I saw that guy, that my algorithm was like, oh, this guy likes people who are, like, training to be superheroes and grab stuff fast, and he sent me, like, another guy. I don't know why, I just find it so funny.
Like, there's so many people, like, so many musicians on Instagram that Brian and I have, like, followed for years, that were like, we would love to have on here, like, not like, and not because they're bad, but because, like, we genuinely, like, love watching their content. Yeah, as bad as it might be.
Yeah, dude, you're totally right.
The internet's really a beautiful thing.
It really, that really does, like, you know, that brings into perspective, like, any kind of, you know, ambivalence or whatever, because I'm always like, oh, I need to, you know, keep posting and remind people that I exist, and then I end up not, because I'm like, I don't know, shy or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, what if it's not good enough, or doing 70 takes of whatever. But then there's all these, like, super famous people that are, like, famous because people are sharing their post, because it's, like, so weird.
I don't think you can.
I think
look.
As an artist, you want to, like, make it this, like, perfect thing that's, like, really good, but then
that's not what the internet wants.
You lose the rawness that that's really what people want. They want to just see, like, you as yourself.
Yeah, I wonder how many of those are, like, you know, self-aware, and they're just, like, doing whatever as a joke.
Dude,
and
there's this
really
one guy on Instagram that I might have to look this up. I can't think of his name, but he just sits out on his front porch and he plays guitar, but he'll sing and play, and he'll play, like, you know, a CCR tune or something, and it'll be, like, just perfectly off, where, like, the guitar playing is, like, just shitty enough that you're like, the singing is, like, just, but I swear to God, I have this conspiracy that this dude, like, fucking shreds, because he's got, like, really nice guitars, like, really nice gear. I'm like, this is all has to be, and, like, all of the comments are like, this dude has to be good, right? But I love that. Like, I love that there's, like, mystery to the world.
The guy who's, like, you know, helping Blank out with this song, or, like, and he's like, just
shredding,
just like attacking the guitar strings as fast as he possibly can, like,
oh my God, I know that guy.
The internet's abusive, but I
just,
I
like,
don't
sitting
think
on his couch, like, played over top of something.
Did I ever send you that Flash Alien Fingers guy?
I don't think
it's
so.
It's this guy who does all these videos playing over jazz.
Oh, yes, yes, you did.
And, like, every video is him just, like shredding like crazy, Carrie King or something like that.
Exactly.
I can't tell if it's a joke or if he's serious about it. But
see,
like,
I go through the world just hoping it's all sincere. You know what I mean?
Me too.
I think there's this weird thing in the world where I think the internet has really, really made people, or at least it's emphasized the sort of cynicism in people. And I think if you look at the internet that way, it's only going to drive you up a wall. If you just look at it, not even through like rose-colored glasses, but if you just look at it like, I hope that dude is totally fucking sincere, it makes the world so much better.
Yeah, for sure. And then, but I feel like they got to be some sort of sincere, because like you can't fake. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But even just the idea of doing that, it just, you know what I mean? Like there's something there for people that they can grab onto. Like, again, it's so interesting to see like what what does kind of break through and people find either funny or interesting or moved by, you know, whatever
I think it's kind of funny how the, like we were talking about, like being authentic or whatever, and how like country music is like huge right now, and you could kind of see that like ramping up over the past like 7 or 8 years.
For
you
sure,
know?
Yeah, it's starting to hit the mainstream.
Yeah, yeah, like when you know you had like Stapleton and Sturgill Simpson and stuff coming out like you know 2015 whatever, and like that was like the prophecy, you know, and now it's like, it's here, you know, it's hitting. But no, I feel like this kind of just like interesting, phenomenon is going on where, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. I mean, there's like the Beyonce country album, and I know all of the, you know, Grammy nominations or whatever, that's like a, you know, you're like in a group that's like invited to be part of the voting group or whatever, just like CMAs, there's like, you know, you get invited because you're whoever to be part of the voting. But some of those songs I had never heard about that she was getting Grammys for on the Beyonce country album, and like I'd heard about a couple of them. But then there's like all these like huge like people that like obviously Sierra Farrell got the Grammys for her stuff, which is great. But then there's like other like big country stuff that we would like actually have heard that was getting passed up for the Grammy nomination over these songs that were not.
I don't know.
I feel like that sort of like mainstream pop Grammys world, like I feel like
it's not
all
realistic.
It's like a kind of like a club of people who are in that club, and they kind of all like I feel like
in the words of George Carlin, it's a big fucking club and you ain't in it.
And it's almost like a it doesn't matter like what the song is, it's like who
what's attached to the song,
what's attached to it,
100%
who got to have something, or you know, who got to get something out of that song.
I feel like with popular music in general, that's like a big part of like the marketability of music, like that shit. Like, I mean, I'm a musician, and the music I like to listen to, I just care about what the music is like. But like for tons of like normal people who are not as musically inclined, like all that other shit around the music that has nothing to do with the music, that really matters.
Yeah, if you're selling Harry Styles' record, you're selling Harry Styles who has a record.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and don't get me wrong, there's some bangers on that record. You know, like like there can still be good stuff in there, but it is such a different worldview. When you're trying to sell an image and all, like you were saying, all the stuff associated with that, and then there's also the music that goes along with it. Like I just generally don't like the idea of giving awards for art. I think it's stupid. I think that people who are I like the idea of people being recognized for making great stuff, and I like the idea of whether it's fellow musicians or just the general public recognizing and appreciating when people make great things. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But the idea of like giving, of like gamifying art in that way, to, and I am a very competitive person, but the idea of doing that with art is just insane to me. Like, I'm like, yeah. Why, in what world does that work? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even trying to go down the rabbit trail of that, but it is really interesting. I guess like the, you know, you got to have the gold record on the wall or whatever. Yeah. they you got to keep accumulating the trophies or the whatever. But the authenticity thing is, it's like what is country music? You know, like, there's the whole, like, you know, it's for, you know, Southern folk, or it's just for like people that are farmers or people that are, you know, in a, working class, whatever. I don't know what the answer is to that question, yeah. But I feel like because it's the popular thing now, it's like so like easy for like whoever that has the musical ability to just like come in and be like, oh, well, let's switch to country now. Mm-hmm. And it's like this.
Yeah, I get it. I think about like Post Malone. I think Post Malone's fucking great. I think he's a really talented guy. I think he makes great shit.
I feel like that's both at the same time. Yeah. Post Malone is like an example of it kind of being both. But yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean
to interrupt. No, not at all. But like, I just think it's interesting because I think something like that, in my mind at least, like kind of perfectly embodies what you're talking about, where it's like you see someone who very clearly loves this kind of music and wants to work in that sandbox. But then once they're in there, it's like, okay, well then what's the sandbox? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you realize it's not really a sandbox. You're on the middle of the beach. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, and there's like other people over there. Like my day job is I'm a middle school music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do for one of my general music classes is I'll kind of show them the idea of genres of music. Cause you know, if I say like, you know, rock and roll, or if I say country, or everyone has things that come to mind for those different words. And what I like to do is like, I'll draw everything up on a whiteboard, and then you see like, these aren't their own little worlds. They all bleed into each other. Like everything. And there's so many different elements that make genre, right? It's genre is instrumentation. It's sort of melodic systems that we see patterns in. It can involve lyrics. It can involve so many different things. And you just start to see that, you know, what I'm fascinated in, because so much of my love for music is in traditional roots music, American folk music and traditional American music. What's so interesting historically is those things have kind of been easier to track, and you can see the patterns in different ways. And, you know, like anything in the world, it's messy, but there are patterns there, and you can, you know, whether it's radio waves or just just basic geography or whatever it might be, you can kind of see how certain things progress over time. And now we're like living in this world with the internet where like all bets are off. You know what I mean? Like it does very much feel like in the last 10 years, it does feel like somebody just flipped the game board, which again, like I would much rather live in that world. I think it's a way more interesting, way more fulfilling, more fun place to be as a creative person. But it does genuinely feel like, oh shit, like there are no rules here.
That's such a good point. Cause like the like physical borders that used to separate places that would create the phenomenon of there being different sounds and genres. It's like the internet's making it to where like those physical borders almost don't exist.
They're completely irrelevant. And like, we've talked about this before, but I think what that does sort of in a practical sense is, you know, back when that was the case, popular music would have to be, you know, it could be quite varied because there were different tastes. And if you are trying to, compete for that, the largest portion of the market, you want to create something that is diverse and interesting and can, you know, pull people in from different interests. But now what's happening is because someone flipped the game board and because all this stuff just seems to be in the air right now, the only option as the sort of popular music industry is to just cast the widest net possible. Mm-hmm. So everything starts to sound exactly the same. But then if you look like outside of that net, everything on the fringes, which is honestly the vast majority of music out there, is so interesting. I mean, because everyone kind of is, you know, you are your own genre, so to speak.
Right.
You know, you are the lump sum total of all of the shit that you like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like everyone kind of gets, I think it's almost like a sleight of hand that's happening where everyone gets obsessed with the shiny thing in front of them, which is that wide net being cast, which, yeah, I mean, sure, there's some cool stuff in there. Like, there's going to be stuff you can find in there that's interesting or does cool things. But for the most part, it is going to be very, very monotone, for lack of a better word. Whereas all of the other shit people are making is like crazy. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You know, you can be Post Malone and be like, fuck it, I want to make a country record, but we're, you know, also going to throw some, you know, rap and rock and hip hop or whatever. Like, I just think it's a beautiful time to make stuff. Like,
definitely.
as much as it can seem hard, I don't think it's ever been easier to do this, you know?
That's
true. People just like to bitch.
True. Very true.
What's kind of like next for you on the horizon? Like, what do you think is, like, what's in the back of your head right now that you want to be tackling soon?
Well, I gotta get some music released. I've been just like working on song ideas, just like randomly just compiling stuff, and some of them are like more finished than others, but yeah, I just gotta start just producing.
Is the goal
like
make
stuff
a record?
Yeah, I feel like you know, eventually having a record would be good, but I just gotta start with just the one song. I just gotta finish something. But yeah,
are you the type of person who just like has a bunch of half songs?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's,
I mean,
that's me too.
It's like it's basically just
it's
like
hard
a bunch
to finish
of lyrics.
Something, man.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of notes with lyrics, and like I can mostly remember the arrangement just off the top of my head. But like, yeah, I feel like going from having the like verse and chorus to actually having the whole song and a demo tape of it is like, that's such a
huge difference. Yeah. Yeah. Like having a good idea and having a complete idea is a very big gap between those two.
Yeah. I learned a long time ago, just finish the thing. And it does, like the quality of the thing is completely unimportant. Just finish the thing. And mm-hmm. that's like, to me, that's one lesson in life, as dumb as I am, that I'm very happy I learned, because it's, I think a lot of it's personality. I think a lot of it is just the way that you do things. But for me, I need to just finish the thing, because otherwise, yeah, I'll just snippets and fragments and like, you know, like
right.
It's hard.
One
it's
thing I've been
hard.
Doing that finds like I find super helpful is I have a YouTube channel. I put little guitar videos.
Brian
on
Graham Music, right? That's what it's called.
There you go. Link in the description, folks. Yes, sir. But I find it super helpful, because to put out a video on there, it forces me to have a complete, entirely finished thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my favorite things about social media, is it, if you're going to put something out, you kind of have to like finish a thing and have a complete.
Yeah. That's one thing that I do find is interesting. Oh, sorry.
Cause if you're just kind of like doing it in your head and not actually putting anything out, then you don't actually have to finish a full thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, actually putting it out somewhere, even whether it's just like YouTube or like an Instagram reel or whatever the fuck, like it forces you to make it like a beginning to end.
To piggyback really off like that a little bit though, one of the things that I do find strange about the way that we're creating and presenting music now with social media is, because, you know, everything is a 15-second, 30-second reel or whatever. Nothing. I think you can get away with things being half baked.
But I don't.
I was just, you know, like, what I mean?
Like, that's so like I. It doesn't have to be that way though.
No,
so,
I know.
I don't
even
post on Instagram, or I don't have a TikTok. Like, I've abandoned all other social media except for YouTube, because you can put out those kind of longer format,
yeah,
right,
full things. And yeah, I hate like you know, because I used to try to like force myself to like, oh, I should make regular Instagram posts and stuff like that, and I'd try to force myself to come up with like a little 30-second thing, and
we've
like
got enough I hate to worry that
short of like short form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. The YouTube and SoundCloud, that seems to be like the way to go. Like, because you can just like upload songs to SoundCloud, you know, and it's you know showing that you've done something, but it doesn't have to be like officially published on all the streaming platforms or whatever. But I've seen guys also, you know, put out an album and then scrub it, you know. Because, you know, but at least they finished it is the point.
I think having something that, like, forces you to have that accountability to actually finish a thing beginning to end is really valuable.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Totally.
Like even if I didn't post any of the videos I make on YouTube, just having to make the videos in the first place is what's valuable to me because it forces me to actually finish a thing.
Yep.
Which I should start doing that for like original songs and stuff. But yeah, I'm the same.
One thing at a time, you know, one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is one thing that I think is really, that is valuable about, doing something like this is it just sort of forces you to like, just put stuff out and you just think, okay, well, like, there is just something to just throwing shit at the wall. As scary as it can seem, there is just something to like, just keep doing it and don't stop doing it. You know?
Yeah. I did my first co-write, like a few weeks ago, and like, that's pretty much all I was doing there. I don't know if I did a great job or not.
Yeah.
We finished a song and it's there a pretty cool
mission
song,
accomplished.
But that's pretty much like songwriting, you know, like we're just throwing ideas at the wall but it's cool. Like everything else I've done is in terms of writing has been like a solo thing or like a passing back and forth of an idea, like over time, like here's this if you want to edit it or whatever. But the co-writing thing is definitely something that I should do more because it helps you finish an idea or, you know.
Yeah, there's like accountability there in some way.
Yeah, and like the spitballing kind of thing, it helps you just like get more comfortable with just like exploring ideas, you know, with other people around because it's like not every idea you have for a word or a line in the song has to stick.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just keeps things moving. Whereas like if you're just sitting there with the lyrics in front of you or like your first couple lyrics in front of you, you could just sit there and just think and think and think.
And you can kind of rest on your laurels a little bit that way too. Like you can get accustomed to the way you do things. Mm-hmm. I do think
you get
too
in your own head. And
yeah, I think there's such value in all art in just going for things and just trying things. And oftentimes the stuff that works is the stuff that I think oftentimes in art, the things that have the most impact on us are the things that seem counterintuitive and the things that seem the most out of left field. And oftentimes the line in the song or the shot in the film or the, you know, whatever that may be, just that turn of phrase in a novel that can seem very slanted and very odd and off can be the thing that stays with you. And a lot of it is just having the balls to try to do that. And just acknowledge that it's not always going to work, and sometimes you're just going to throw out a stupid idea. But all of my favorite stuff has some element of that at play, where it surprises you. You know, like that's part of the fun of life is being surprised.
Totally,
but it's hard because it's scary. It's scary to like say, well, let me try this. You know, and because you get comfortable. You get comfortable with what you think comes next, you know.
Totally. Totally. Is it cool if I run to the bathroom?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Brian and I can just, we can shit talk, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What you been up to recently, buddy? Oh, shit, I'm knocking stuff over. Son of a gun, hang on.
I gotta say, we need to have a talk, Casey.
I'm knocking shit over.
This chair is way too squeaky.
I know.
I'm trying not to move at all in this. We need to buy new chairs.
I've been wanting to fucking yell at you this
entire podcast. Dude, I'm not moving at all, and this chair is just like fucking killing me.
Trade me chairs. Trade me. Because I feel like I can have that chair and not make it squeak. You just move constantly, dude.
Well, you know what? Sorry. Jesus.
Can you not sit still?
Well, now you try it. Fuck. We're keeping this in. We're not editing this out. We're not editing this out.
I took the wobbly chair because I was like, oh, Casey's going to squeak if he has
it. Oh, see, listen to this. Nothing. There we go. Just give it a second.
But there's nothing on this either, dude.
Oh, it is.
Like, just how is the chair squeaking so much
for you? Just put your headphones
on. I wanted to fucking kill you this entire podcast.
Nothing. I'm moving around all this much.
So am I.
No squeak. No squeak.
This, like...
What is it?
Dude, like, the entire podcast.
Oh, my God. It's been driving insane. I keep looking at you.
So why don't you fucking sit still?
Because I am, and it's still squeaking. Oh, my God.
It's not squeaking now that I'm sitting on it. Okay. You think that's coincidence? Well, listen,
it's not squeaking at all now. This is such a fucking mess. We're scrapping this whole fucking show.
No. We're keeping this whole thing in. One of the things we've talked about is getting better chairs because I feel like... If we had some chairs with like a back and
like
lean back
I want arms, you know what I mean?
We're gonna get like
that'd be nice. That would be
mic arms,
legit.
So you can move the mic wherever you need.
That's
gonna be the next.
See, like,
upgrade,
Brian, this is killing because now no squeak at all.
It's weird because there's no squeak over here either, and I'm sitting in the same chair you were.
No squeak, incredible! Look at that! God damn it!
Apologies to listeners for the all the squeaking.
You know what?
This
we were worried about like the thunder and shit and the rain, and it just turned out to be my ass. So
a comment. Leave a comment roasting Casey for ruining this podcast.
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry myself to sleep tonight. I mean, excuse me. I think just having a game plan is huge. Having some kind of. I mean, it doesn't have to be something you even stick to. But just having something in the forefront of your mind that you're sort of pointed towards, because with art it can seem so elusive and it can seem so like constantly out of your grasp. You know, I think that just having that is such a big, it makes a world of difference. I mean, and again, even if it's a project that never comes to fruition, just having something that you're pointed towards is huge. I think.
Absolutely. But,
I don't know. Again, I'm talking out of my ass though, because I know absolutely nothing. So that's been the nice thing about doing this show is like, you know, Brian and I just shit talk for, we're like, we have idea about any of this stuff. Such is life though, I guess, you know.
No, it's cool to explore ideas.
Yeah, it's cool just to like kind of, I feel like also like you sort of get into, you can get into, even with really good friends, you can get into routine with what you know, like what you explore when you're hanging out, you know?
True.
So it's fun to have something where you can just sort of go down those different rabbit holes and see, you know, just again, throw shit at the wall and see. But it's been interesting. It's been fun to have different people on here that,
and just hearing like tons of people's like different perspectives on music and shit. It's been great.
Yeah. It's been a grand old time. I think we'll keep doing it, you know?
Yeah. It's cool. For it's now. Like a game, you know?
It is. Like, everyone comes to the table for different reasons, which I think is also really fun. Mm. Like, everyone's here. There is that shared love of music. That is the one singular constant between all of this, is just that love for whatever this thing is.
Right.
And beyond that, it is strange to hear, like, oh, there's a lot of reasons to show up and want to do this.
True.
But... I don't know, man. It's been cool though. I'm fucking glad that you came out here and we did this. This is a lot of fun. The songs sound great. Like, I'm excited to put those out because
those will come out real good.
Yeah, those will sound hot fire.
Some bangers in there.
Yeah, dude.
Sure.
That first one, I don't think there's like really a good recording of it. So I'm glad
now there is. So you're set, dude. I'm glad we could, you know, help you.
For real, man.
But yeah, those will be fucking cool. I'm really super glad you did this.
Me too.
Follow this guy and all that. Social media crap.
Links in the description.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
See y'all next time.
Brian, this chair thing was driving me crazy. I kept giving you the side eye.
I don't understand. I think it's a user error, dude.